This episode of the Major Issues Podcast is brought to you by patreon.com/CBC Clubhouse. Comic book clickers on Patreon, guys. For as little as 10 cents a day or $3 a month, not only can you help keep the lights on here at Comic Book Click headquarters, but your donation gives you access to exclusive content like CBC commentaries, polls where you can choose what content we cover next, and special behind-the-scenes footage of things here at Comic Book Click. Visit patreon.com/CBC Clubhouse today and become a Patreon. And remember, you, yes you, are worthy. Hello everybody out there in comic book land. My name is George Serrano, aka The Don, and if you're listening to this, you can only be here for one reason, and it's a brand new episode of the Major Issues Podcast, brought to you by comicbookclick.com. And as always, I am never alone. Sir, can you please introduce yourself?
Ooh, we're back in the studio and we are Lizive with the Cloudus Maximus here.
Yes, we have Cloudus Maximus here. We scoured the multiverse for you, sir. It's been quite some time since you've last been on this show, but what a apropos episode for you to join, because we'll be tackling the first season of Marvel's What If. And those who know me personally know that the entire journey of the MCU, I kind of did hand in hand with you, to the point that the very last one of the very last films in the entire saga we were able to watch together. And so when it came to this, we've sat and I think we've almost watched probably every MCU movie once they came out on DVD and stuff. We've chatted about all of them. You were the first co-host of the Major Issues Podcast, and this is episode 199. Episode 200 is next. So we've come a long way, both as, you know, podcasters, comic book click, but also as the MCU. The idea that we would be tackling multiversal implications. And I was going to say so early, but it's been 10 years. But, you know, I'm so
glad. I was going to say here, 10 years ago, you'd have told me that. I'd have looked at you and scoffed like, yeah, they don't even have Spider-Man down. Like,
you know, 100%. Yeah, 100%. And so the idea that we're tackling that now, I think it's pretty cool. And so just a little bit of homework up top. What If is an American animated anthology series created by A.C. Bradley for the streaming service Disney Plus, based on the Marvel Comics series of the same name that debuted in February 1997. That series will go on to explore how the Marvel Universe might have unfolded if key moments in its history had not occurred as they did in the mainstream continuity. It's the fourth series in the MCU, fourth television series in the MCU, followed, or I guess preceded, by Loki, WandaVision, and Falcon and Winter Soldier.
And the first animated that's part of the MCU family.
Yeah, it was. And same thing, like, it's just instead of tackling the alternate timelines in the multiverse of the comics, it actually plays with the timeline of the MCU, which is really, really a really cool idea. Because we've never seen that done in a film franchise before. Mm-mm. We've seen it in the comics, and comics span so far that you can literally pick any thread and pull it. This is the MCU storytelling has been quite tight. So to change little aspects about it and go in completely different directions was very, very interesting. I guess up top, before we get into each individual episode, as we will, what did you think of What If as a whole? And did you have big expectations going in?
As a whole? Yes. Yeah. I'll get into expectations just in a second, but as a whole, oh my goodness, dude. So much eye candy. Oh my God. First of all, eye candy galore. The animation, fire. I had no idea, besides the trailer, I had no idea what was gonna be, you know. Yeah. So going off of trailers and stuff like that, and anime, I was excited off the animation alone. I'm gonna just slide that in there. I was just, and on top of seeing Captain Carter, evil Doctor Strange's doppelganger, you know, that dude.
Well, I think the series does have a very interesting art style. A lot of it is a cel shading animation, but I think this series really sings when they get to the action scenes. When it gets to these fight scenes that we've seen in the series, they're done in a way that they couldn't do them, I'm assuming, in live action. And they've actually added depth to characters they couldn't before, you know, through this series. I think that was done on purpose. But like, especially when they deal with the cosmic elements, when they get when like the magical elements and the cosmic elements dealing with Ultron and Strange specifically, I think, man, that art style is so killer. Cool. The great thing is they were able to get a lot of the OG actors in for the series, but they couldn't get everyone.
That was so cool.
We got no Hugo Weaving, who's originally played Red Skull. Instead, Red we got Skull. Ross Marquand, who actually played Red Skull in Infinity War and Endgame.
At least they brought
so
back.
That's it's yeah, kind of you know close yeah, yeah, it's close yeah. It's cool. No RDJ, Iron Man was such a huge character in the MCU, yeah, and crazy. One of your favorites. How did you feel
and
about
it's not, and it's not like and it's not like him in the studio with beefing
no
Johansson.
I mean it's probably money some money issues there,
you know, which is why it's like I mean you could have tapped him on the shoulder,
yeah,
you know. I don't know if he wanted to get tapped on the shoulder.
He's probably doing Doolittle, maybe.
I feel like it's once of the when, it's a thing where they gave him his exit, and yeah. he didn't want to like dibble dabble. Once the door was closed for him, that was it.
Yes,
you know.
So we have Mick Wingert, who does a good. I guess a good Tony Stark. I actually didn't like how Tony Stark was drawn either. It felt weird to me. Yeah, you know what it is, Tony Stark looked completely different when we first saw him to what the later what he becomes later.
I feel like they tried to make him look a little cooler.
Yeah and so it's a little bit,
but he was already cool. Just draw him out.
He was pretty damn cool. They don't bring Dave Bautista back either.
No, they don't. I was about to say that Drax isn't in it either.
He's in it, but not
Batista.
Yeah, he's played by Fred Tatasciore. Peter T. Delaney plays Peter Quill. Lake Bell.
I'm just glad those that replaced the actors for the characters were at least to me were a good fit.
I think Lake Bell does the best. Lake Bell actually in DC animation plays Poison Ivy in the Harley Quinn series. And that weird, dry, almost Daria kind of delivery she gives to Natasha in this. Because, like, as you said, there's no Scarlett Johansson in this. But I think she does a great job playing Scarlett playing Natasha in this series. I don't think you can really tell for the most part.
No.
I think she did really, really good. Beth Hoyt played Pepper Potts because, as we know, Gwyneth Paltrow doesn't even know what film she's in. Don't even worry.
It's
about
like,
it,
hey,
girl.
Can you just come slide through the studio?
Yeah, don't even
stand in front of the camera.
Cynthia McWilliams plays Gamora. Hudson Thames plays your boy Peter Parker / Spider-Man. What'd you think about that?
I thought that was cool, man. Like I said before, like the ones that they did, like I can tell it was just I wanted them to do justice with the ones that they didn't, that they couldn't get, and I was happy that they did. Especially for the favorites like Peter. Peter was seeing him around was cool, but listening to him, I was like, all right, it's pretty close, so we good here.
He's only in one episode, right?
Yes. The zombie episode.
Right. Josh Keaton goes on to play Steve Rogers. And then Kif VanDoorheuvel plays Obadiah Stane, so they didn't get old boy back for that. But besides that, they got a lot of people back. One of the first people we heard was signed on to come back for this was Captain Carter, Agent Carter, Peggy Carter, Haley Atwell. And that's the first episode that came out. So what we're going to do is we're going to go over the episodes, a little bit of a recap. We are going to rank them out of 5 Uatus. That's the name of the watcher.
Uatu.
We'll talk about what we like and what we don't. And then when we're done, we'll name our 3 favorites, which I think might be spoiled by our rankings when we give those. So let's get into that first one. What if Captain Carter were the first Avenger? So during World War II, Steve Rogers is chosen to become the world's first super soldier, the same thing as in the film. But instead, he's wounded by a Hydra spy before he can receive the serum. So SSR agent Peggy Carter kills the spy, receives the serum instead, becomes enhanced, but she's banned from combat. After she takes the Tesseract from Hydra with a vibranium shield created by Howard Stark. Dominic Cooper is also in this playing younger Howard Stark, as he did in that series as well. She gets promoted to the role of Captain Carter. Stark uses the Tesseract to create a weaponized armor suit for Steve Rogers as the pilot, the Hydra Stomper, almost like a prototype of what would eventually become the Iron Man suit. Carter and Rogers fight many battles until he goes missing while attacking a Hydra train, maybe frozen. Maybe he's the Winter Stomper. You know, who knows what's going on with that. Carter and her allies find Roger. Oh, no. Find Rogers when they infiltrate a Hydra base and see Red Skull using the Tesseract to open a portal and summon an interdimensional creature, which happens to backfire and kill him anyway. Carter enters the closing portal to force the creature back and shows up on the other side 70 years later with the Tesseract opening a portal from which Carter emerges, meeting Nick Fury and Clint Barton, and seemingly following the footsteps of Steve Rogers, where he's now back and on the team, you know, the Avengers Initiative and stuff. So up front, I like this episode, but this was probably the safest episode.
I was just about to say, like, yo, they kept it pretty. They didn't go too far. They didn't go too left. They gave us the story they wanted to tell us, and everything else after that was led up to us.
Yeah.
I did like to see Peggy and Steve one last time, even if it was a what if. I thought that was cool.
I thought the action scenes, like the action montage of her just flipping trucks and beating up Nazis, was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like her voice acting too. I dig that character. But if I'm gonna go first, and you'll go first on the next one, I'm gonna give this 2 out of 5 Uatus. Mostly because it was safe. Now, I think that serves a purpose, though. I don't think that many people coming into this were receptive to the full nature.
I think it was just to get everybody. I feel the same way. I think everybody's it was just to get everybody's feet wet.
Right. So, how many Uatus are you giving the Captain Carter story?
I'm gonna be a little generous. I'll give it 2.5.
2.5.
I'll give it a two
and one eye. Watching with one eye.
That's only because you know, I still feel bad for Steve at the end of Endgame, not getting his.
Yeah.
You know, to see it happen in a different universe where the roles are still even reversed, but to still have them, you know, conquers all, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I felt good for them.
Definitely. That story, you know, that it goes throughout the MCU, like from First Avenger all the way to Endgame, like you were saying, and it definitely pulls on the heartstrings. But speaking about pulling on the heartstrings, my heartstrings were pulled when I heard a certain voice again, seemingly from another dimension, seemingly from the astral plane. We're talking about episode 2, What If T'Challa Became Star-Lord?
My impression of the music is bad, but you know,
the spirit is definitely there. Did you think about hearing
stand up and, you know, poke my chest out?
What did you think about hearing Chadwick again, though? What did you think about the return of
Bozeman? Man, bro? You know, I knew it was gonna happen. I just didn't know I wasn't gonna be ready. I don't think any of us were gonna be ready for that, you know, because. Some time has already passed since he's passed, you know.
I want to say 2 years.
We as a fan base have had time to settle our feelings and grieve, you know, and go through the motions. And then What If comes out, and then we get this episode, and then he walks by. Well, that's after the episode, but then he walks by to the Wakandan ship in the collector's room, and the Wakandan music just starts to play, and it's just like, oh man.
Yeah, there's really only one T'Challa in my mind, you know, like I don't know how they're going to succeed with him moving forward, but this was also an incredibly fun episode. It was kind of lighthearted in many ways. So the difference is in 1988, the Ravagers are sent to Earth by a celestial called Ego, which we all know happened, to go get his son Peter Quill. Mm-hmm. But instead of getting Peter Quill, they mistakenly abduct a young T'Challa. So 20 years later, T'Challa becomes a famous intergalactic mercenary Star-Lord and has been convinced by the Ravager leader Yondu that Wakanda was destroyed. Nebula approaches the Ravagers and proposes to steal the Embers of Genesis, a cosmic artifact capable of eradicating galactic hunger, from galactic kingpin Tanalir T'Van, who we know as the Collector.
The Collector.
At the Collector's HQ on Nowhere, they offer him the Power Stone as a distraction. But meanwhile, T'Challa looks for the Embers and ends up finding, as you stated, a Wakandan spacecraft that was searching for him. Nebula seemingly betrays the Ravagers, who are captured, but this is another ruse in order to obtain the Embers. Mm-hmm. The Collector's slave, Karina, rescues T'Challa and helps the Ravagers defeat him. And then T'Challa forgives Yondu for lying about Wakanda, and they return there so T'Challa can reunite with his family. But elsewhere, Ego approaches a Peter Dairy Queen Quill. Janitor, Peter Quill, to seemingly follow out his plot from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, where he's trying to use all of his seed to control.
I was trying to look for another word around that. Yeah, doesn't really know the word.
Well, I mean,
that.
The literally seeds that he was planting on each planet.
But that's how that episode ends, right?
Yes, with him coming. Yeah, and then like zapping him or whatever. But what did you think about this episode? I had said that the series gives a lot to people who may have only been pigeonholed in the actual MCU. And the two things that raised an eyebrow for me in this episode was we got way more Collector than we probably ever gotten, you know.
Oh, hell yeah. And he was badass.
He was like what do they call that? Like flamboyant? Like he puts on Hella's helmet.
What you gonna tell him? You gonna diss him, or he gonna put you in a box?
Yeah.
So you can watch him all day every day.
He puts on Hela's helmet. He puts on Korg's arm.
That was cool. When he broke out the whole collection, you saw Cap's shield. Yeah. And everyone in between. That was
really, really cool stuff. But then also Babyface Thanos, right?
Thanos, because, you know, he'd still do it, you know?
They kept making fun of him, right? They kept making fun of him. Captain Genocide, I think they call him.
Still Genocide, the guy. And that was cool too, like to see I was gonna say Chadwick, but you know, yeah, but to see Black Panther, literal king,
yeah,
in the MCU. Mm-hmm. Just to see him like just
be Robin Hood
and chill with the be Robin Hood with the rest of the Ravagers, being suave, you know.
Yeah,
that was cool to see his hair laid back. Same thing with Thanos too. He was pretty, you know. He gave up the life.
Yeah,
you know,
which also made me think it was also
because of Star Lord.
Was that too much of a leap for you? A lot of people didn't dig that. They were like, oh, all of a sudden he gets one talk and it's over.
I feel like Star Lord is very diplomatic. And, you know, I don't want to say kind-hearted, but yeah, I guess I'll say kind-hearted. Well, he makes you see the other side of things.
T'Challa gives a hell of a speech, man. T'Challa gives a hell of a speech. Yeah,
and I was just about to say he got away with words, so I'm going to think he really convinced Thanos to be like, chill.
Yeah.
You're going to still like it, but you need to understand it's kind of messed up, bro.
The other character I think had a really cool flavor about them was Nebula. Nebula in this, man, like
it's
the hair.
It was definitely the hair. I was gonna say she was a little bit more girly, but it was definitely the hair. Definitely the hair.
But she's like kind.
She
of
was feeling
like,
her. She was yeah. She was feeling herself. I like that. She
a
was
bit really of a femme fatale, like kind of using her sexuality to kind of get around. And you know, this is not one that was. Constantly
but also the robotic stuff. The robotic stuff isn't phasing her as much as we thought it. As much as we,
I don't even think she has the whole eye thing, right? She doesn't have like the whole.
No, I think it's just like a little thing though. But she's still enhanced and stuff. But none of that phases her. She's still out here on the streets, you know, giving people the eye, looking fine. You know what I mean? That was cool too.
We never got to see her in that light.
I was definitely not. I was definitely not expecting that. Drax, he's a bartender, but he's still Drax.
Yeah, yeah. It's still still literal about everything.
So yep, still literal. Too.
How many Uatus are you giving?
Uatus, I'm gonna give this one a 4.
Whoa. 4 out of 5 Uatus. 4.
We're doing 4 out of 5. We're doing out of 5 Uatus. Yeah. Right? I'll give this one a 4.
I also give this a 4.
I also granted, give this a 4. Granted, with the Black Panther stuff and the Star-Lord stuff, but this episode was pretty damn cool, man. To see.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. So I'm giving it a 4 out of 5 as well. It was like you just said. I think if one word can encapsulate the entire thing, it was just cool. It was just like a too cool for school kind of episode. And Black Panther adds so much to the fabric that is the MCU. But...
And you get Thanos fighting the Dark Order by himself at one point in that episode.
I mean, like, he gets his ass whooped, but
yeah, he does throwing hands.
It does fight him. And like I said, Black Panther adds so much to the tapestry that is the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but we wouldn't be anywhere in the MCU if it wasn't for the Avengers. So episode 3 tackles what if the world lost its mightiest heroes.
That was scary to see, man.
This was the first bit of darkness that was added to this, because Captain Carter's story is basically the first Avenger. Mm-hmm. And then this next story was, like I said, incredibly lighthearted, and the winner wins at the end. This mm-hmm. one was a bit more dark and almost a bit of a murder mystery in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
It was the first one to me that's like, oh, okay, we're killing people? Like, we're here.
Yeah,
now.
It was funny because I was getting Who Killed the Watcher vibes from that shit at the beginning.
Original
Sin. So I was like, oh, yeah. It's funny because I'm watching and I have that in the room. And right after the episode was done, I went to go look at the cover for that. And I was like, oh, man, you sneaky bastard.
I got something about that later on when we get to the end. But so over a course of a week, S.H.I.E.L.D. director Nick Fury attempts to recruit heroes for the Avengers initiative, but they're each mysteriously killed.
Natasha just dying. The second he recruits them, they just dying off, dude.
Natasha injects Tony Stark with an unexpected fatal injection.
Oh my
that
God.
One got me.
First of all, we killed Tony once. Why do we keep coming back to kill him?
I don't think the only universe in which he lives is one where they leave him behind to go do another, another thing there.
But yo, that was crazy too, because she hits him with the syringe, right?
And we've seen this scene, right? We've seen this scene.
Yeah, we've seen it. It's over. He gets hit with it. Boom. He gets some borrowed time, you know, while he looks for his own element to fix this. But in the What If episode, she hits him with it, boom, and then he passes out. He dies. And that's it. He dies.
It's like,
and they arrest Natasha.
Yeah. And then Clem Barton accidentally shoots and kills Thor, who didn't have the hammer because of the whole event.
That was crazy, yeah.
Bruce Banner, a Hulk, just explodes from the inside out.
That was crazy too. Ooh.
Probably was supposed to be more blood, but they had to just put it green stuff because, you know, this is still an animated series here.
Yeah. That was the right thing to do.
And then, you know, Natasha tries to figure out what's going on with all this, and she's attacked and killed while she's investigating all this kind of stuff. But before she dies,
who else dies? Somebody else. How does Clint die? Clint dies too.
I believe Clint does die too.
Or does he get caught?
I think he does. No, he goes to jail, doesn't he?
Interesting. I want to say he gets caught, but then see, this is what I'm saying. I've been on this road for so long. I'm starting to mix stuff up.
Oh yeah, different things. I'm looking up an article how each MCU hero dies in What If Episode 3. But while I do this though, did you have any idea who this could have been?
Hell no. My mind was all over the place. And the crazy part is, because I know it's What If, I'm just like I'm grasping at crazy ass straws. I'm thinking like, oh my God, what's happening? Oh my God, Kang's gonna pop up. Oh my God, who the hell could it be? It's a disease. Oh my God, is this gonna go into the next zombie episode?
Right.
Oh my God.
he kills him while he's in his cell waiting for charges. I think he does the same thing he did to Iron Man. Where he gets like in his brain or whatever. You know, like he gets microscopic and kills him from the inside. So Natasha is able to get some information to Fury and says that all the murders are related to Hope. And I still didn't get it. When I heard Hope, I thought Captain America. Like, yeah. I thought Hope.
I already knew Homegirl, but I was like, man, no way. There ain't no way they're gonna throw that shit in front of us like that. And they did.
I think the issue for me was that I think what threw me off the scent was that this was all phase one, and we don't get Ant-Man till phase two.
Yeah, yeah, you know? 100%.
So I was completely thrown off on that. But the Asgardians, led by Loki, arrive on Earth, like the events of Avengers 1, but we don't have the Avengers to stop anything. So Fury proposes an alliance to apprehend the killer and deduces that Hank Pym, of all people, is the murderer and has been using his shrinking technology to commit the murders as revenge for the death of his daughter.
Crazy. Hope the reveal for that was crazy, because when he comes up and then he takes the mask off.
Yeah.
And he's in the yellow jacket suit.
Yeah, he is. And he has like those deep bags under his eyes.
Yeah, like he hasn't slept in fucking years, bro. I was like, oh no, Hank is crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And Michael Douglas, you know, when he wants to get intense as an actor, he totally can. And he did it voice acting in this. You felt the pain of a father who lost his daughter in this. And the idea that he would then systematically try to kill the Avengers, I think is very interesting. And it's also interesting to place him this early in the MCU timeline, because like I said, again, we don't get any of this stuff until after Age of Ultron, which is good.
Hell yeah. But one can say that he was always, I guess, out there, you know?
Yeah, already, definitely.
Doing doing his Pym thing.
Yep. Fury and Loki defeat Pym, who was taken into Asgardian custody. Loki chooses to stay on Earth, becoming its ruler, and Fury begins assembling more heroes, finding Steve Rogers frozen in ice and summoning Carol Danvers to Earth. So I dug this. I'm giving this 3 out of 5 Uatus.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But not, it's not a bad 3 out of 5. Like I said, I'm just trying to differentiate.
I gave it a 3.5. I'm trying to do something solid, but it's the half that are killing me right now.
Yeah, yeah. I have no half.
The half is off of shock value.
Yeah.
And bro, seeing fucking
it was dark.
Get killed off. Yeah,
yeah,
it
that's
was.
Just dark.
Seeing everybody get killed off was crazy. And seeing what really got me too was seeing the Hulk go back to the university where Betty is.
Yeah. Yep.
That was crazy. That was crazy to me too, because I haven't seen that setting in so long. And you know, but with
they don't like to
Universal
talk about
at the time,
it.
They don't like to talk about it. Like, so to see it in an animation during What If was pretty cool to me too.
Yeah. Yeah, I gotta agree with that. And you know, you end up watching this episode, there's so much death on the table with everybody seemingly
the whole team biting the dust. Jesus.
Yeah, all of them biting the dust. And we go for one like murder massacre mystery to a episode that just deals with a single death for the entirety of it. That's What If Doctor Strange lost his heart instead of his hands. So after losing his girlfriend, Dr. Christine Palmer, who was played by Rachel McAdams in a car crash, Dr. Stephen Strange, played by Benedict Cumberbatch, travels to Carmitage and learns the mystic arts. He discovers the Eye of Alchemata, which can manipulate time, but is warned by the Ancient One and Wong that doing so could destroy reality. 2 years later, Strange repeatedly attempts to use the Eye to save Palmer, but she still dies in every scenario. The Ancient One tells Strange that Palmer's death is an absolute point in the timeline that cannot be undone. But Strange refuses to listen. Using the power of the Dark Dimension, the Ancient One splits Strange into two alternate versions. One Strange who accepts Palmer's death, and the other one who gains power by absorbing mythical beings, becoming Strange Supreme. This evil version overpowers the good Strange, absorbs him, and uses his power to resurrect Palmer, tearing reality apart. Strange Supreme begs the Watcher for help, but he refuses to intervene. Palmer disintegrates, and the universe collapses, leaving Strange Supreme to grieve alone.
Destiny.
Awesome. I thought this was an absolutely awesome episode. I think that one of the strengths of this episode is the fact that they actually got Benedict Cumberbatch to do the voice for this.
Yeah.
Because when he is sad, when he is in that level, you feel it.
You can, yeah. His tone is just, you get, it's heavy.
You totally do. And the fast montage of him in his inability to stop her from dying was heartbreaking. Mm-hmm. Even the one where I think he like lets her stay home and she gets shot.
Yeah. I already knew they were going to do, I kind of felt like they were going to do that because of the time stone and thing and MCU history, of course. But I was like, oh shit, you better stop, bro. You don't even know. You know, so I'm like, oh man, bro, you just keep doing this to yourself.
Yeah, he fights that first mystical being and kind of gets his butt kicked. And then it's like, he needs
more power.
Yeah.
More power.
And then he just becomes obsessed with it. I love the character design of him. Again, the bags under the eyes, the dark purple instead of the blue.
Me personally, before the MCU and stuff, like I was never reading like Doctor Strange comics, but I was always big on Doctor Strange because I knew who he was. His name carried weight.
It rang bells. Yeah.
So when they were announced Doctor Strange for MCU, I was already over the moon because I already knew the type of party it was gonna be. I'm a sucker for anything. I'm a certified sucker for anything. Doctor Strange in the MCU, because I already like his first movie is just a perfect example of what could come of anything Doctor Strange related. He set the bar as far as magic goes. So anything that he's involved in, I'm just straight up front and center. And it's cool to see him get his own What If episode, because I'm just going to be at the forefront for that too.
Yeah. I think that, like, I think it was so interesting to have the Ancient One in this and try to talk him down. I think it was interesting to have the other Doctor Strange face him. You know, like this brighter, happier, but way outclassed Doctor Strange. Yeah. I'm a sucker for a magical battle, and the way that they depicted the power that the other one had, the weird glyphs, the protection spell on the face.
Oh, the protection spells on the face. You see it falling off as he's getting his butt whooped. Oh, yeah. Dude, man.
And they kind of did something a little bit.
The match psychology in that.
Yes, 100%. And they kind of did something a bit tropey, but it totally worked for this, where it's a line said even in a movie, one of the Marvel movies that recently came out, which is like, do you think that if the person you're trying to save could see who you have become now, they would agree with everything that you've done? And that's what happens. He basically gets the power of a god, right? And can reverse time, pull the car out of the ocean, separate it from its elements, and then just pull Christine in. And he has seemingly everything that he wants. And she looks at him and recoils in horror. He's got tentacles and claws and horns. And he has become this Cthulhu-esque nightmare. And she wants nothing to do with it, even after all this has been done.
Yep. All for naught, Steven.
It was absolutely ridiculous. And he... Strange hits a point of so much power that he becomes one of the first people to kind of sort of see Uatu, right? He becomes the first one to see Uatu's like, and you know, he just was doing too much evil stuff. And the doctor's like, what? Who said that? You know? But like the like almost Black Mirror-esque darkness of the episode ending on his universe imploding upon himself, and all he could do is create like this little mirror universe that he could just sit in while the entirety of his reality literally crumbles in on itself. Needless to say, I'll do this right up front. I gave this 5 out of 5 Uatus. Watching the tragic nature of this and the absolute point, as they talked about, like the fact that he could not change anything, watching the depths of desperation of what he was willing to do, the rules he was willing to break, the creatures he was willing to kill just to get back what he wanted, all of that sits very highly on my list here. I wanted the character to return, and he does. And people are wondering whether or not this character will eventually exist in the actual Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I think there's actually a good chance he probably could. And if he did, you know, it
I am starving to see any one of those animations next to a live action, bro.
Yeah, and we'll be dealing with multiversal implications in Multiverse of Madness. So who's to say that we don't see any of these people show up there? But what do you give it out of 5 Uatus?
I'm gonna give it four. A strong ass four. Only because I'm a big fan of of how an episode makes you feel.
Yeah.
I felt kind of bad for him at one point during the episode, man, because he is no matter what he like, and it's like fuck. I'm trying to feel for you, bro. But at some point, you gotta know, like this is a bit much. You know what I'm saying? It's just him having to relive all that shit over and over, and thinking that yo, listen, this is the time. You know, this is gonna be it, right? It's not it. No matter how hard he tries, she still dies. She has to die. She's going to die. No matter which way you cut it, slice it, dice it, and he went through it, man.
I also think, like I said,
only reason why I don't give it back is it made me sad.
I also think that one of the things that it deals with that I know personally, and probably why I related it to so much, is that it's very hard not to take deaths from people that you are immediately close to. It's hard not to take that personally, right? It's hard not to be like, why of all people did you have to take that person from me? And I felt that through Strange. Like, he's like, no matter what I do, why me? Why her? Why this? And we've all been there, I feel like, at different points in our lives where we're like, you know, really? You can't throw me a bone? Like, of all things, you had to take this from me? And his inability to just cope, his inability to just get past it, shows you the depths of grief. And yeah, really, really hit home for me. We go from one, you know, seemingly one death and resurrection to a bunch of deaths and resurrections as we get to Marvel episode 5 of Marvel's What If. What if zombies? Just What If Zombies is the title for this.
And you know, it's funny. I had just gone most of the way through with zombies right before I had I had gotten to this episode. I think I had probably gotten most of the way through zombies like right when this started happening, because I knew the zombie thing was going to come around.
What do you think about the Marvel zombie comic series?
I have part one, because I think there's like two parts, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
From what I understand,
I know it's actually branched out.
Or even more like in between stories and stuff like that. But for the main part, part one is pretty fire, dude. Like it's crazy.
Fire.
And the comic, so I have the whole volume. The volume is pretty big.
Were there any kind of homages to any of that story here, or is this kind of whole cloth, like something new?
There's some stuff in there. There's some stuff in there.
Yeah.
I want to tell you, but I don't want to spoil anything. The head, I think, with Scott was something too.
Very Futurama.
Yeah.
Let's get into this though. So in the quantum realm, Hank Pym again finds Janet Van Dyne, but she infects him with a quantum virus. They return to Earth and cause a zombie apocalypse. What I like is it's seemingly the same exact events from Ant-Man 2, except when they come back out of the quantum realm, they're both infected and they just seemingly wreak havoc on the world. 2 weeks later, a group of survivors, Bruce Banner, Hope Van Dyne, Peter Parker, Bucky Barnes, Okoye, Sharon Carter, Happy Hogan, and Kurt from Ant-Man, learn there might be a potential cure for it in Camp Lehigh. They lose Hogan, Carter, and Hope to zombie attacks on the way there, where they meet Vision. His Mind Stone can reverse the virus, exemplified by a cursed Scott Lang's head kept in a jar. A cured Scott Lang, because he cured him, but he had to put his head in a jar. But an infected Wanda Maximoff is immune to the cure, and Vision has been kind of feeding pieces of T'Challa to her.
Yeah, so that's a big thing. That's also a big thing in the comic, too. Okay. I was wondering if they were going to do that. And is it the same people,
Vision and Wanda?
A lot of it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. But so, that whole T'Challa on the table thing is a whole thing too.
Maximoff breaks free and kills Kurt, Okoye, and Barnes. I like the design of Wanda Maximoff as a zombie.
Yeah, I was gonna say cool. Wanda Maximoff was a god.
Yeah. Yeah. I like when they start when Banner takes her on and it's Bruce Banner as the Hulk versus Wanda Maximoff. She had
everybody shook, bro.
Yeah.
She came out to play and everybody was like, oh, let me get out of her way.
And the whole I love the delivery of the line, like, you guys shouldn't have come here or something, I think is what Vision says, right? Like, after things start kind of getting figured out, he's like, yeah, you guys probably shouldn't have come here, you know, Mr. Banner or whatever. And then, yeah, he's a robot. So I guess all those calculations make sense to him. But the idea that he would feed other Avengers to her, that's a lot.
That's, yeah, that is a lot, right? But that's the love of his life.
The love of his life.
They can't chew through him. He's the only one that could, you know?
Yeah. Vision commits suicide to give the Mind Stone to Peter Parker. Banner transforms into the Hulk and sacrifices himself to battle Wanda, allowing the others to escape. And to broadcast the stone's energy across the world, Peter, Lang, and T'Challa go to Wakanda, where a zombie Thanos wields a nearly complete Infinity Gauntlet. So I wonder
that
how...
And the episode ends right there. That was one of my favorite episodes. Oh, man. I had my score ready, but that ending killed it for me.
Yeah.
That shit gave me an attitude just now. Wow.
So what's your bet on him? When did he become a zombie? Like right before right after he collected all the stones? Or you think he was zombie Thanos going around collecting the stones?
Nah, right when he came to Earth. Had to be when he came to Earth.
Yeah.
That was crazy.
I think
see the whole thing glow. Guys just flew by him.
Yeah. You're up first with your Uatu score.
Yo, my Uatu score. You know what? I'm gonna give it a 4.5.
Ooh,
screw it. Screw it. Because the ending gave me, pissed me off. Like, not pissed me off bad, but it got heat. Because I was like, how? Because I wanted, because this guy, you can't end that. And then it's like, all right, you're gonna end it right there. But I know you guys know what happens after that.
Why won't you tell me?
That thing, that the rest of that story is in a vault somewhere, underground, inside of a volcano. It's gotta be, bro. That was crazy. That was bananas. I looked around my living room. I was like, that's it. Oh shit.
That's funny. So I'm giving it a 3.
A 3?
But the reason why I'm giving it a 3 is because I feel like the biggest problem with this episode is the tone. It goes from like dire to funny.
Yeah,
it goes from like dire to like the funny Peter Parker zombie land kind of stuff.
Your homies are dying left and right, bro. You gotta lighten the mood.
We just came off of the Hank Pym murdering everyone episode and the Doctor Strange episode. So I felt like we were already kind of playing with the dark. Like, just get. I'm weird about that. Like,
they had to give you something with a balance this time.
Yeah. I don't blame them for how they did it, but there's a lot of really dark implications for a lot of the deaths in this.
And oh, hell yeah, bro.
They kind of zoom past it to get to, like, the idea that Ebony Maw and them would come and try to do their same thing, and then Iron Man comes through, zombie Iron Man.
That was cool, too. I popped hard for that.
That was pretty funny. He should have kept his face shield on, bro, because I don't know how Iron Man gets bit.
I would like to know how each of them got bit. That's what I would like to know, too. Who else gets... Who? Somebody gets bit that don't know they got bit. I think it was... Isn't it Sharon? I don't want to say... Or no. It might be Widow. Hogan? I'm going to say Widow, or it might be... Or Peter.
Yeah. Hope is the big... She, you know, she takes the sacrifice at the end. Where she's like, Peter Parker, I don't understand how you're so optimistic all the time. And he's like, you kind of gotta be.
It was her that got bit.
Yeah. And then she becomes real big, and then she kind of passes out. It falls down.
Yeah, in Wakanda, right? And she passes out.
No, in the Camp Lehi, when they go to do the Wanda stuff, she's the one who gets them over the fence because.
That's right, because then she falls backwards.
Yeah.
Or she's real big.
Yeah, so the idea that they had to deal with all of that and then eventually potentially having to deal with zombie Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet, that's a very interesting place to leave them off.
And I, like I said, I had just finished reading some of Zombies too, so I was already in the realm of zombies. So I was digging all of that shit.
Yeah.
So, and you know, I'm a sucker for a good workaround as far as story goes. So as long as it made sense, that was cool. And yeah. In the comic, it's Fantastic Four in the forefront of all that.
Oh, that
gets pretty. Yeah, that gets pretty crazy.
I can see Reed Richards trying desperately to figure out how to stop all this in a scientific way, you know.
It's two versions of the Fantastic Four.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Like Injustice. Like
when you something like that, timeline
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think the next episode is a bit of an odd one to include, but I really dug it as well. What if Killmonger rescued Tony Stark? So, in Afghanistan, Tony Stark is ambushed by the Ten Rings, as he is in Iron Man 1, but instead he's saved by Eric Killmonger Stevens. So he never gets hit with the IED, you know, the bomb. He never gets the shrapnel in his heart. He never gets the arc reactor put in. He never becomes Iron Man, seemingly. Instead, they return to Stark Industries, where Killmonger exposes Obadiah Stane's involvement in the ambush before helping Stark build a handful of humanoid combat drones using vibranium. Needing more vibranium to create his drone army, they arrange for James Rhodes to purchase it from Ulysses Klaue. So happy to see Klaue back. I fucking love Klaue.
Yeah, that was cool. Yeah.
At Killmonger's behest, Klaue leaks word of the transaction to Wakanda to lure in T'Challa. Killmonger kills both T'Challa and Rhodes, staging it as if they killed each other. Then Stark confronts Killmonger, but Killmonger kills him too. It makes it look like a Wakandan attack. He then goes and kills Klaue and reunites with his relatives in Wakanda. So Thaddeus Ross sends the drone army to attack Wakanda, but Killmonger helps the Wakandans defeat the drones because he helped make the drones. And he becomes the new Black Panther. As the United States prepares for another attack, T'Challa's sister Shuri visits Pepper Potts, who is suspicious of Killmonger, and proposes an alliance to expose the truth because she has proof that he actually did kill T'Challa and Tony Stark. And that's how that episode ends. I'm up first. So I give this episode 4 out of 5 Uatus. The reason
what?
Why... Now, here's the reason
go
why.
Ahead. Go ahead.
The what? Reason why is I completely forgot how much I like the character of Killmonger. Mm-hmm, I also completely forgot how hype that weird trap African theme gets me when he shows up.
Wakandan, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
the Wakandan loud pack.
The only thing is, I don't think Michael B. Jordan is a great voice actor. He sounded half asleep throughout majority of this. Maybe because he couldn't see himself there.
I feel like his character was you feel like his character was self-aware that he knew
super
he was
chill.
In
you're just super like
recording
yeah,
this
kickbacks. Like in all he never I don't think he ever raises his voice past the
yeah,
he's in,
yeah,
in,
I think
in
he
story he's in control the entire time, so I get the demeanor, but I would have liked a little bit more fire. I did not I expected him to turn on Wakanda with the drones. So another thing that raises this up a ranking for me is the idea that he would create a false flag situation so he could be the king of Wakanda.
The king Wakanda?
I thought he was doing this entire thing to kind of destroy Wakanda. And the idea that he still wants it, you understand? Mm-hmm. That even after all
those years, take over the world.
Yeah, he still wants to be home.
You gotta think about it. It's still kind of something his birthright before T'Challa.
Yeah. But that,
you know,
like I thought it was going to be
so
one of
in
those
a
things.
Sense, I feel like he feels that he's owed that.
Yeah, 100%. And that what is that called? Entitlement. You know, he has a level of entitlement when it comes to his birthright. And I think what makes this interesting, as I said, is a lot of the Killmonger story actually resembles an African proverb that says, the child who is rejected by the villain will burn it down rejected by the village would burn it down to feel its warmth. And instead of burning down the village, he just makes himself the king, which I thought was really, really, really interesting. Especially when he takes the Black Panther herb and talks to T'Challa on the other side of it. So now we get Chadwick Boseman in it. That bumps it up for the ranking for me.
Yeah, right.
I truly underestimated how much I would enjoy this. And I truly underestimated what his end goal was, because I thought it would just be him burning down the whole village. But mm-hmm. what a smart triple, quadruple step plan to get here. But I also can totally get if people dug this a lot less. What did you think about this episode?
I dug this a lot less.
That's fair. That's what this discussion is about. I dug this
a lot less. Because yeah. they killed Tony again.
You are over at this point. I'm
tired of seeing Tony die. I'm killing my man.
I feel you. I ain't even mad at you. They was getting at your boy Stark something heavy in this series.
Because the next time he got to die, I'm just going to no sell it. Okay.
I like when he confronts Killmonger. He's like, this you? You know, like he props up on the hologram stuff. Yeah.
But if I have to give it how many utaos? I'm gonna give it a 3 because I wasn't expecting to see Chadwick in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just thinking he was gonna do a hostile takeover. You know what's crazy? Would have bumped up this score for me a little bit. Mm. As much body bags as he was filling in that episode. I would have liked to see, you know, next scene, it cuts to the next scene and we come into him, you know, adding freaking things onto his body count and some bumps. Yeah. I would have loved to see that, bro. Ooh, that was cool. That would have been fire.
Yeah, the actual Black Panther, I don't think we actually see him suit up as the Black Panther until he returns later on in this series. Mm-hmm. So that would have also been a cool little thing to do, to actually see him put on the suit and stuff. But yeah, I dug that. In the same sense, like what you said with the zombies, I was just getting into it. They do that mm-hmm. reveal that they might catch him, and then mm-hmm. the episode's over. And I go, what the hell just happened?
Yeah.
I was way into it, and then that happened, and I'm like, that's ridiculous.
I'm telling you, they're gonna stop killing Tony trying to get heat.
I think the next episode is also one that people fell on one or side of the other with, and that is the "What if Thor was an only child?"
Episode. I really like that episode. Yeah, not for nothing. That episode that's up there for me.
yeah. So after defeating the Frost Giants, Odin discovers the abandoned infant Loki, but instead of taking him under his wing, he returns him to Laufey. Centuries later, Odin's only son Thor has become kind of a boisterous frat boy, party loving prince kind of guy.
Party animal. Odin's son, the
party animal, party pooper.
Number one party guy for him right now.
Slurms McKenzie, he's the number one party guy. So, Odin goes to sleep. He does his Odin sleep as he does, and Frigga is away. Thor travels to Earth to host a large party with aliens from across the universe. His arrival attracts the attention of Jane Foster and Darcy Lewis, who join the party. As Thor and Foster grow close, acting S.H.I.E.L.D. director Maria Hill summons Carol Danvers to end the destruction caused by Thor's antics. Danvers is unable to defeat Thor without exerting her full power, so Lewis and Hill suggest that she take the fight to a less populated area while Foster contacts Frigga, you know, calling mom, with Heimdall's help. Hill readies a nuclear strike. Man. I love how S.H.I.E.L.D.'s first thing is always a nuclear strike. They're just going to blow
get
up.
Get the nukes.
Get the nukes.
Who's got the keys?
Don't they joke about that in this? They're like, we never get to do this or something like that. Like,
excited. Romulo says that. Yeah, never get to fire the nuke.
Yeah, they always want to just blow up whatever's happening. They ready the nukes. Danvers and Thor begin to battle again, but Frigga contacts them and says she's coming. Thor and the party goers do basically a Ferris Bueller and clean up the whole mess before mm-hmm. mom gets home. Later, Thor asks Foster out on a date, but he is interrupted by an army of drones led by Ultron, who is in Vision's body and has all 6 Infinity Stones dropped.
That was a cliffhanger like a mother lover.
It was.
First of all, Planet Party Thor, that's what we're going to call him, because, you know, people throw house parties, he throws planet parties, all
right? Right.
You heard? First of all, Party Thor, I can't hang with Party Thor. I'm gonna say that right now. He got it.
I am of the full belief now that funny Thor is the only Thor I want. Like, he can be in serious situations, but his whole universe is so ridiculous. So ridiculous that you got to kind of play it like they did in Ragnarok, in my opinion. I know not everybody feels that way, which is why I say that people may not dig this, because this is ultimately, like I said, kind of Ferris Bueller. Like, it is kind of like, mom's coming home. We got to clean up the, it's every mm-hmm. sitcom, right? We had a party. Mom's coming home. Oh, she noticed the one thing that we didn't fix. And now she knows that there's a party, you know? All the stuff of him just laughing and him calling Carol Danvers a party pooper, dumb fighting. I thought mm-hmm. all of that was terrific. Howard the Duck and Darcy getting married. Like,
that was funny, right? Ridiculous. his fight with Carol, fire, bro.
It did more for Captain Marvel than Captain Marvel the movie did.
I was just about to say that. If anything, it got Carol a little bit more over, you know, but yeah. Fam, her throwing the hands at this man and he's just eating them. Him throwing the hands at her. She's just eating them. They're scrapping, bro. They're scrapping.
It was pretty cool, especially when you have that scene in Endgame, right?
Where he's like, wrap it up, or I'll call your mom. Oh, yeah. Poopa.
Basically, Surtur is there. He's trying to flirt with the Statue of Liberty. That's his
He melts that shit.
Yeah. But possibly my favorite is when one of the VIPs comes to the party, exclusive invite. Loki Laufey's son shows up.
I brought him another mother. Oh my god! So that got spoiled to me, right?
Yeah.
And that pissed me off.
Yeah.
Because I was like, oh man, because I knew if I would have seen it on the day I was supposed to, but it still got the reaction out of it. I was like, oh my god, because I saw everybody online too, and I'm like, oh shit.
It's the Brothers Thursday. Forever that was really
Brothers,
cool.
Yeah, Brothers Forever.
Brothers Forever. But then he's like, I'm out because, yeah, your mother's actually coming. So we're going to take off. We're going to leave. This is a little bit too much.
Brothers from another mother.
All of that. And then him still like trying to flirt with Jane while the world's like he destroyed the Mount Rushmore and stuff. There's a whole bunch of stuff happening and he's still trying to flirt with Jane Foster and still trying to bag that, which I thought was pretty funny.
Try to go on a date, bro. He's just trying to go on a date.
And then I like that when his mom comes, everybody's in on it. Like even Carol Danvers comes by and it's like, hey, I have those files you were looking for or whatever. When you see that Ultron with the Infinity Stones at the end, what did you think?
Oh my god, I thought we were all gonna die.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought it was over. What are you gonna do? What party are you gonna throw? This nigga don't want a party.
No, he's not a party. He's not a number one
he
party.
He did not come to party. He came to poop. He is a party pooper.
Yes, he did. What are you giving this out of 5 Uatus?
Ooh.
I'm gonna actually bump this up a half for me. Because now we're doing half, so I'm gonna bump this one up a half.
I really want to give it a five.
Yeah.
I really want to give it a five.
I don't think but I gave. You know what? Screw it. I'm gonna give it five.
I'm gonna give it the five Uatus. But the clip hangers were also is a big part in that.
Okay.
I can't even lie. Because I knew nothing else was connected. Nothing else was teased for next episode until we got here. So yeah. I was like, oh, snap.
Yeah, totally. Big multiversal implications in this.
Big multiverse. Yeah. And I didn't know. I was definitely sleeping on Carol with the hands.
Yes.
And Thor a little bit. I wasn't.
And Maria Hill kind of being sarcastic towards her for losing. Yeah. That was pretty funny because it kind of got her upset. She wants to fight him again. That was really, really well done.
Run it back.
I'm going to give it 3.5 Uatus out of thing. It was definitely fun. The clean up the house before mom gets here was a bit childish. Yeah, I felt like they would have found something.
I think so. Yeah. And he's pretty much king. You know?
Yeah.
Because Odin's asleep.
I thought that was interesting as well. We're at the final two, which one could argue is a bit of a two-parter. But number 8 is What If Ultron Won? And so Ultron, having taken the Mind Stone and Vision's Vibranium body from the events of Avengers Age of Ultron, that's his whole entire plan, is to create a new, more impervious body of pure Vibranium. That he would then use to destroy the Earth. And he has defeated the Avengers. He launches a global nuclear holocaust, killing most of humanity. the scene where he has the reality stone and just creates all those Ultron bots just to surround him, I'm just like, this is it's
redeeming qualities, family.
I've probably said it a couple of times on this podcast, but I'm not the biggest fan of Age of Ultron because I feel like I wanted my Ultron
because you know what Ultron can be out there.
Yeah, I want him to be more Terminator-esque, colder, less quippy, less emotive. I didn't want his eyes to be able to wink or squint. I wanted just those weird red glowing mechanical. And that weird open mouth that's just always red. Like, I wanted that.
But I mean, to be fair, him seeing him throw on the Ultron armor when he didn't have to was scary as
hell. And the cape to me. Right? Like,
and the cape. Like, doesn't I don't need this. A cape. But I'm just going to style on everybody while I kill y'all, wipe y'all from existence.
Totally. And then when Thanos shows up on Earth to complete the Infinity Gauntlet, Ultron just bisects him right down the middle with the Mind Stone.
Right down the middle.
And takes the rest of the Infinity Stones and puts them in his
chest. He saw the glove. He saw everything. He didn't even really need to put two and two together. He didn't really need to be smart to know what was up.
I also like that he didn't use the glove. Like, I like that he just put it in
himself. Yeah, he just boom, 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 boom.
Places it in himself. And then using the drone army and all his powers, he basically wipes out almost all the life in the universe. Ultron, when he destroys all the life in the universe, he's like, is that the... I think that might be the Carol Danvers moment, right? Where she comes and he has a fight with her. And then she's like winning. And he's like, you have a lot of heart. Boom, the entire planet.
Rocks her, bro. Like,
he blows up the entire planet, but like a little sliver of land that he's now on, drifting through space. And he seemingly won. He's done what he has to do. He believes mankind. And
he becomes self-aware. He becomes more aware.
Yep. And he also becomes aware that he is being watched, which is my favorite part of the entire series. Yeah. Is when he turns around and goes, who's there?
Shit.
And then... Uatu is seemingly watching all these events from a keyhole or like, you know, the door hole, the whatever. And when he says who's there, he like backs up like he could be seen, like he backs up like, oh shit. So interesting. And then he goes and discovers all of the multiverse, the one thing you don't want him to do. I was getting chills as he's like, oh, there's so many different worlds. I'm like, just
jumping back and forth to wherever, whenever. I like, that's in the next episode.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get to that too.
He attacks the Watcher in his multiversal observatory. But meanwhile, we see Clint Barton and Natasha survive Ultron's attack and find a copy of Armin Zola's mind in Siberia. Also really, really cool. There's that moment where they're looking through the boxes and they almost don't find the box that they're supposed to. Like,
I can't interfere.
And Clint's like, I will never find it. I'm like, he's like, you're so close. It's right there.
But I can't interfere.
But they decide that, you know what? The way to stop an AI is another AI. So they upload Zola's body into a drone body. And then that's another favorite part of the episode for me is they cap the legs because they're like, you might trade on us. You're still Hydra, bro. You're still Hydra.
First things first.
But they end up not being able to do it because Ultron has left their universe to go fight the Watcher. Barton sacrifices himself to allow Romanoff and Zola to escape. He also has a cool metal arm in this universe.
Yeah,
he does like the Soul Stone kind of sacrifice in this, which I thought was interesting. But what I also thought was very interesting is I always like that pose he does when he turns around and aims the arrow. Where he has to swing around.
And he draws back.
Down to fight all those Ultron bots.
That's that Avengers 1 jumping off the building.
And if you've read Age of Ultron, this is basically Age of Ultron. Like the dystopian world where there's just Ultron bots everywhere, absolutely everywhere. And there's, you don't know, heroes are coming up with their own little secret headquarters because they have to hide from this multiversal threat. So it gave me the best parts of the comic story while also like playing around with the idea, like I was wondering how safe they were going to be with this, to watch him just taking out universes.
Nobody was safe.
Yeah, he battles the Watcher across different universes. The Watcher goes Super Saiyan at one point. puts on some armor. The scene
armor. And there's I thought he was gonna wax Ultron when he threw that armor on, bro. I thought it was over.
There's a scene, and we made a little meme of it on our Facebook, but the scene of, you know, Ultimate Ultron eating a galaxy. Like what? Like what? Like we start to realize really early on that Thanos is not as quote unquote crazy as we made it seem. He literally wanted it for one reason, to use it once and never use them again.
Yeah.
And we can see what an actual out of control evil villain would do if they had all of it and just go universe to universe, destroying it.
Even in Infinity War, he tells us, I'd use the stones to get rid of the stones. Work was done.
Yeah, and then in the very beginning of Endgame, he only had one thing he wanted to do with them. And this is the pure horror of being able to, like, the animation alone of them smashing through multiversal glass, if you want to say that. Very, very cool stuff. To fight in his headquarters,
What episode was that? Was this one or the next one? He was punching the Watcher. They were just going through the timelines, jumping through the timelines and stuff.
Yeah.
Jumping through the universes. That was crazy.
So, so cool. And then basically, because he does beat the Watcher comes and shuffles his feet and walks over to evil Doctor Strange and is like,
hey man,
hey, bro. Yeah.
I got problems.
I know I'm not supposed to interfere, but we're gonna need your help. Hell of an episode. What did you think? How many Uatus are you willing to give it?
So it's funny because this episode and the last episode, I really counted like as one little small movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that.
You know?
Did you ever think it was all going to connect like this when you initially saw the series?
I thought every episode was going to connect. I just didn't know how. So to find out that they didn't, and then to find out in the last few that Ultron popped up out of nowhere was a what if on his own. So to see him pop up and know what the next episode was going to be was pretty surprising, because that was the only episode till right there where they gave us a post credit.
And they still kind of played around with it, right? Because you have like the poster they released for it was just randomly Gamora for the next episode,
right?
And I was like, what are we doing? Like, we had to go back to the Ultron stuff. So what's it ranking for you?
That's a 5. Right off the bat.
Right, I also agree. Right, 5 out of 5.
Right off the bat, bro. Right off the bat.
This is because, the multiversal implications we've always been waiting for, right? A threat this big.
I could pretty much say it here, too, because this is going to go into the next... to the last episode for the what if, but redeeming Ultron 100%. Anybody had any doubt of Ultron and his ability to get the things done, bro, what if does it?
Yeah, totally. I really,
what if does it 100%.
I really dug this, and the thing is, like, things like this make me like, this is what I like. I like Spider-Verse, I like more Lun and the energy vampires going from universe to universe just killing people. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought that was so cool, and seeing that on the grandest scale, like literally just these universes have no chance against Ultron. Like, he's way too freaking powerful, to the point that he got Watcher on the ropes and he got cosmic powers.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point Watcher kind of gets cocky, you know, he kind of like, who do you think I am, you know? You know, kind of
Right after he put the armor on, I think he said that.
The Super Saiyan joy. He put the Super Saiyan armor on, which I thought was pretty interesting. But yeah, I got to agree with you. 5 out of 5. It's everything I wanted from a multiversal story. I want balls to the wall.
Yeah, hell yeah.
None of this stuff has to have lasting implications in my mind. If they do,
I wasn't expecting Ultron to go so crazy, to be honest.
Yeah.
I was expecting more, but that was a lot of heavy shit.
Yeah. It was. And even the way that the Watcher, who's played by Jeffrey Wright, we probably should have said that up front. The way that he sort of explains the whole situation of like, he ran out. He did the one thing he had to do and kind of ran out of things to do and just floated through space and reached a level of omnipotence where he was able to then see other universes. It was very tense. They found a way to make it tense, even though it didn't have long lasting implications mm-hmm. and stuff. So definitely that. And then we have number 9. What if the Watcher broke his oath? What if the Watcher broke his oath? Where we have the Watcher recruit Strange Supreme, like I said from the last episode, mm-hmm. Captain Carter, Star-Lord T'Challa, Party Thor, Black Panther Killmonger, and a Gamora variant who killed Thanos. Seemingly, that was an episode that they were going to do, and they couldn't fit it into this season. It might be in the next season, but it was supposed to be a What If Tony Stark Landed in Sakaar episode.
Ooh.
Which is why he has kind of like the Ragnarok paint. Remember when he's in the Hulkbuster and he has like the Ragnarok paint on it? Yeah. And so... yeah, they just didn't do it. And they, you know, we know very little about Gamora because she doesn't have an episode attached to her. But
I mean, it was cool. It was cool to see him, to see her in his, in her dad's armor. That was cool.
I liked the You Are Chosen. I liked him appearing in various.
You have been chosen.
Yeah. And everybody freaking out because they're like all in the middle of something. And then somebody's like, hey, who's the big headed baby in the background?
You have been chosen.
Yes. I choose you, Pokemon. And so he hits them all up and he's like, hey, you guys are, I need you guys to help battle Ultron. You guys are basically the Guardians of the Multiverse, which is a cool little tagline.
Yeah, that was pretty cute. Yeah.
I heard other people suggest that, like Legends of Tomorrow, these are people that if they died, wouldn't be like, it wouldn't matter. You know, like,
the idea. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Which is kind of dark, but also kind of funny. You know, like these are just offshoots of our heroes. So if they were to go, whoops, you know. But Ultron confronts them in a universe lacking intelligent life where T'Challa steals the Soul Stone. Strange teleports in a zombie horde. Really, really awesome scene where he just opens a portal in the sky.
That was fire. I was like, oh no. I thought it was over for him, to be honest.
Yeah. When he said it's what comes with it, but I thought big ass hope was gonna show up.
But then again, I was like, it's a pile of zombies on this vibranium android.
Who can't get
and
bit.
Let's say they even get through the bite. Yeah, he can't get bit. He can't turn. They ain't gonna do nothing to him. They just slow him down.
Yep.
And they did for like a couple seconds.
But what was it ultimately? It was ultimately Wanda Maximoff
who shows up. Yeah, man.
You understand? Zombie Maximoff shows up again and gives it to Ultron again because of her awesome hex powers. And I think he might blow up that world too. I think he did blow up that world out of anger.
I think he did.
Anytime he's semi-losing, he's
presented a problem that he's like that it might cause that it might have him use his elbow grease, he just gets rid of the whole planet.
Blows up the whole planet. And so the team goes to Ultron's home universe and they meet that Natasha Romanoff, the one we were speaking about that had the Ultron bot mm-hmm. with Armin Zola in him. And so Ultron follows them to that universe and they basically the fight restarts again. My least favorite part of this was the inclusion of an Infinity Crusher machine.
that was convenient. I didn't see that coming.
Came out of nowhere, convenient, but then not because it doesn't work because they're from another universe.
Yeah, I was a fan of it not working. That was cool. The reason why was because exactly that.
I wasn't a fan of the Mario Kart, like, light up, ding, 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 kind of thing. You know, it is what it is, though. Like, we were told that only the stones can destroy the stone, so the idea that they would just make something that can just felt a little weird.
Right.
Carter helps Romanoff shoot Ultron with an arrow, in the eye containing Armin Zola's mind. Zola wipes Ultron's mind and takes over Ultron's body. But Killmonger attempts to steal the Infinity Stones from himself, and Zola fights him over them. And it kind of puts them in this weird standoff, or whatever you want to call it, where they are both pulling for the same energy. And so Doctor Strange puts them in a pocket dimension. Armin Zola and Killmonger, and Strange agrees to be the babysitter because if they go out,
that was
out,
cool. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting some funny business, but I didn't know who was gonna come from. I was expecting either funny business from Zola, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely, and it was right because he was trying to steal.
Because you know, Killmonger looked like he was just biting his tongue, like, "Yo, I'm gonna just do this and go home."
Yeah,
type of deal, you know.
And I think from the very earliest part, Gamora's like, "Do you trust him?" And Thor's like, "Ah, I trust everybody." So there's that too. I absolutely love the Viva Las Vegas from Thor. He's doing that the whole episode. He's doing that the whole episode. He had me dying the whole episode. I have a talent of getting unwanted attention. All of that had me rolling. But I feel like this was Doctor Strange's episode again. I feel like him and Thor probably could have done it all this. Natasha is a hell of a shot. Shoots that arrow.
I just feel like Strange commands the room, and no matter where or what he's in. To be honest.
Yeah. I like seeing Armin Zola and Vision inside the mind of Ultron, where you get to see, like, they like have a debate. Like, you know, Armin Zola's in his Matrix form and stuff.
Yeah. And Ultron is all orange and Vision-y.
Yeah. And you know what I just realized? And this is probably very, like, people probably recognize it right off the top, but there's a part where they blow like a hole, right? In the Ultron Vision guy, and then Zola's face is in the stomach.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember, but that's basically how Armin Zola looks in the comics.
Yeah, that's how he looks when he's on in his getup, right?
His head is a camera.
Face in the,
and then his head is in the stomach.
I call him, well, what Thor calls him, stomach face.
Yes, he's kind of like Krang from the the Ninja Turtles, where his face is like in the stomach and stuff. So I thought that was a pretty cool callback.
Body parts are coming out.
it was kind of surprising that Killmonger and Captain Carter and even kind of Natasha are on this team because they're like humans. Like he could have just, you know, turned them into peanut butter, but Doctor Strange gave them those protection spells, which I thought were pretty cool.
Those protection spells. Yeah.
They had like magic armor.
I was like, everybody gets one of these. Let's go.
Yeah, everyone got some cool magic armor. But I love that every time Ultron took it up a notch, Strange took it up a notch. I love that he really...
So, absorbing all that power for homegirl, you better release some energy.
When he grows, when Ultron grows way bigger, and then Stephen Strange just unleashes like humongous tentacles out of his body that just, you know, wreak havoc, like... So cool. The storm of Mjolnirs that attack Ultron, like Thor throws Thor throws Mjolnir at Ultron, and then Doctor Strange versions of it.
Turns it into like a that was fire, bro.
And they just start whooping his ass. They just start bink bink bink.
Boom, 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 boom.
Whooping him something crazy. So awesome. But, you know, they're able to put them in the pocket dimension. The Watcher returns Strange, Carter, T'Challa, Gamora, and Thor to their respective universes. I don't understand where Strange went because his universe is a pocket dimension as well.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understood why he would join this team and why he would watch over, babysit, because... The alternative is what? Being in that pocket dimension, right? So I'll do anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'll do anything, you know, to get out of solitary confinement. You know, I'll walk the yard. I'll mop up the bathroom, like you tell me. But one of my other favorite parts is Natasha's like, I'm not going back. I don't care. You can't make me.
Yeah, because she's the only one.
Yeah, and yeah, on her Earth, yeah, everyone's dead. It's an apocalypse.
She says she's literally the only one.
And so in this moment, I thought that they were setting her up to be the man on the hill. Is that what they called it? Remember that I think Bucky was this. He like watches from the moon or something. I might be misremembering this. But in Original Sin, it's decided that someone needs to be up there making sure that things
Tread Lightly. I have it, but I haven't read it.
That's not too spoilery.
It's one of the original sins.
Yeah, that's not. It's not too spoilery because the whole thing is who killed him, and I haven't said it. But at one point, there's a what's called a man on the wall. I think is what they call it, which is somebody out there. So I think they tease this idea in the MCU proper with Nick Fury hanging out in that space base with the Skrulls. Right. You know,
like on the moon.
Right. Yeah. But I thought that they were going to have Natasha do this. Instead, they end up bringing her to the universe where the Avengers were killed by Hank Pym. And she helps defeat Loki. So that's what is happening there. In case anyone was confused.
You know, it's funny. That was going to be like one of my last questions. Like, what universe was that? Because I saw Cap, you know. First of all, let me backtrack for one
second. Go ahead, Broski.
Did you not catch that first homage to the first Avengers shot with the Guardians of the multiverse?
Oh yeah, the circle around kind of.
Yeah, moment. that was fire.
What about the awesome Winter Soldier homage in the beginning of the episode with Captain Carter in the stealth suit fighting Batroc?
That was fire too. That was fire too. I kept looking at the emblem on her chest because you know the stealth suit in the same way it was with Caps.
Yeah,
so it was pretty cool.
Besides Strange and Thor, which I said were highlights of this episode, alongside Vision and Killmonger, I actually really liked the relationship between Natasha and Captain Carter. You know,
it was a different one,
right? And she's like, I believe the term used on my Earth was BFF between us two. Like, I know who your father is, I know who your mother is, and all that kind of stuff. And in the Winter Soldier homage, Widow is trying to set up Carter, like how she was in the actual Winter Soldier with Steve. Like, hey, you should hit
him. Yeah, it was homegirl.
Yeah, I thought that was really good.
What if his name was Steve?
Yeah. In a mid-credit scene, Carter and her universe's Romanoff discover a Hydra Stomper armor with somebody inside. Dun, 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 dun. Dun. So I'm going to give this 4 out of 5 Uatus only because I feel like the one before it was a bit better. It edges it out a little bit. So to make that distinction, and I didn't know we were using halves, I'd give this a 4.5, you know, if I could. But just putting the 5 right above it, you know, I was blown away, but I did like how they tackled the end of this. I liked that they were going to put everyone right back to the time when they left so that nothing messes up with the timeline and stuff. I was proud. It was a good landing for the entirety of this, in my opinion. What about you?
I think so too. I think one of the things that I like to figure out from which I think it was from Battle World or Secret Invasion or Secret War, one of those three, that they won and nobody on their planet would know. They caught the W for that. The only people that will remember were the people that were directly involved.
Yes. Yep, totally. Which is interesting as well because it's like, how the hell can you do all this, save everyone, and then not get no credit? Like, that's got to be a kick in the teeth a bit.
Cut the check, watch it.
So you're doing what?
I'm doing 5.
Five?
I'm doing 5. I'm doing 5.
So it was to you, it was a 5-star 1-2 punch with episodes 8 and 9.
Hell yeah. Respectable. And both episodes played off of each other. That's what I really like too. So I'm glad for that. I'm glad that the last two were heavily connected.
Yeah, we're definitely getting a season 2, and I'll talk about that future real quick. But first, I wanted to get what your top 3 What If episodes are, considering that the season 1 is already done, and maybe, you know, we can infer what you liked about this series based on the ones you dug. So what do you think is your top 3 episodes?
My top three, I don't have to put no particular order, right? All right, so it'll have to be the two Ultron episodes, right?
Yeah.
The two Ultron episodes and
zombies.
I'm trying hard not to play zombies.
What is competing with zombies right now in your mind?
T'Challa's episode.
Yeah.
And the Doctor Strange episode.
Okay. Okay. What wins? Gun to head.
Gun to head.
Ultimate nullifier to your head. What do you?
Gun to head. It'll be zombies.
Okay. I think that's respectable.
And that's the only one where I see Peter, bro.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. The only one where we all see
Spider-Man
Peter.
Fan. I obviously,
and I'm trying to, and I'm not saying that with Peter in mind, you know. Yeah. Everybody, I mean, it's well documented how I feel about Spidey, but still.
I also think it's important to say that the Marvel Cinematic Universe has succeeded because it's a myriad of so many different things, and your least favorite Marvel movie is somebody's favorite Marvel movie and vice versa. So it's not to say that the ones we pick are the be all end all best, but I wanted to see, you know, odds are we were going to have different choices. You know, what's top in mind is that Doctor Strange one. Like I said, really, really dug.
Can't go wrong with that, man.
I'm doing When Ultron 1.
That's a party.
When Ultron 1 is up there as well in the top three. And then sliding my man, Eric Killmonger, and for the rest of it, getting the
bodies. See, I'm glad ours are a little bit more similar, because if it wasn't for one of those Ultron episodes, that What If episode would definitely be up in there.
You know, killing people.
But then
it's
hard, because then, I don't want to make the Doctor Strange episode feel bad.
Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. One of the writers said that there was a potential for variant characters in the series to appear in live action.
You see?
Yeah. As What If concepts from Marvel Comics eventually made their way into the main continuity.
I'm going to shut my mouth.
Haley Atwell expressed interest in a live action film starring the Captain Carter. Though Atwell...
I'm gonna put my phone on airplane mode for a whole 6 months. You're gonna have to keep track of me through burner phone, dude.
Yeah,
you know, because
you're gonna start dropping some things. One of the writers and Haley Atwell are really interested in making Captain Carter a movie. Straight up, one of the things that came out this week was that a spin-off series centered around Star-Lord's T'Challa had been in development. But because of the death of Chadwick Boseman, is now in limbo. So the idea was like him and his merry band of thieves, you know, the Ravagers, that Thanos and Nebula and Kraglin and et cetera. So I also decided it would be quite interesting if we came up with our own What Ifs. Which is kind of hard because there've been so many in this series and in comics in general that it's kind of hard to pick one that probably hasn't been done. So I decided to stick to the MCU. What if something changed in the MCU? I'll go first with mine, and I think it would make things quite interesting. Mine is, what if Janet Van Dyne never got trapped in the quantum realm?
I like that.
So in my opinion, if she didn't get trapped in the quantum realm, her and him would still be working for S.H.I.E.L.D., would still be like superheroes, and they would predate Iron Man in a lot of ways. But I think in doing so, and his beef with Stark, it might turn Iron Man onto a different side of things. You know, I think that we might end up getting like two quasi Avenger teams, and maybe even a civil war of sorts, where you have these S.H.I.E.L.D. sanctioned Avengers. Right, the Hank Pyms, the Hawkeyes, the Black Widows, the people that they mess with, right? And then you'll have like the unofficial, the Iron Mans and everybody else from there. Janet and Hank are such huge parts of the actual Avengers, the actual comic book Avengers. Janet is still constantly on the team.
Yeah, still on the team, yeah.
Hank is actually the one that creates the Ultron in the comics. So him being sidelined never really sat well with me. I love Scott Lang and I love Paul Rudd. Their inclusions in the MCU are definitely cool, but I think initially they were considering introducing these, you know, Ant-Man and the Wasp in Avengers in 2012. And who knows?
I wonder how that would have happened.
Yeah, who knows how that stuff would have came about. But that's my what if. I really do wonder, what if Janet Van Dyne never got trapped? What? Because Hank ends up leaving S.H.I.E.L.D. because of Janet, remember? They like get on his case, and he punches that guy in the face or whatever. But I would be really, really interested to see a universe where there was an Ant-Man for years, you know, doing his top secret missions as he was prior to that. And what would have, you know, what would have come out because of that, I think would have been really, and the effects of the continued meddling with ping particles. Like, what would have happened? Like, what if would we have seen a giant man way earlier on? You know,
right? Because after he has the beef with Shield, he just takes his stuff and just goes.
Right, right. But I'm wondering if there would even be a beef if Janet was still alive, right? And then, you know, what does the actual government think about Shield having this guy who can turn really small or turn really big, depending on having this technology? I think all of that could be very, very interesting. Did you have a what if, sir?
My what if is, what if the Watcher had somebody watching him?
Ah, interesting. And what if he was recruiting
the squad? Somebody else had jumped in to be like, listen, you all right?
Somebody bigger than him, almost like the Living Tribunal or something, coming through. And what if they
I was just gonna mention Tribunal, but I feel like they're purposely saving him.
I think it's interesting to think of, like, what if that thing. What if that what whoever was above him?
Mm-hmm.
What if that person decided that things had to go the natural order of things?
Right?
And he's like, he busts Ultron out of that little, you know, that dimension thing, and we're right back to where we're at. It's so crazy.
I'd screw Ultron. I'd start with the guy up top.
Oh, yeah. That's also true. But yeah, I wonder, I mean, we're seemingly getting season two. I think season two is going to be another set of 9 episodes. I'm hoping that they go way crazier with it. Like, you know,
I'm hoping too, but I don't even know where to go with all of that.
No, yeah, you're right. 100%. But it will be interesting if season two also has a connecting thread of a plot.
True.
And it'll be extremely more interesting if we follow up with the thread that we dropped with this. Maybe there is somebody, you know, if he broke his oath, he swore an oath to someone or something. What would happen if those people were aware of what happened? And how does one punish a Watcher? How does one punish a multiverse? You know, how does this all go? So I think all of that is interesting as well. But we live in the universe in which we started Comic Book Click 199 episodes ago, and we are thankful for every single bit of support that we've gotten along the way. You guys have helped this podcast grow. We've tackled some of the latest and greatest things to come to comic book media. So I want to go ahead and thank the fans of the multiverse for helping us achieve that great feat. Without you guys, we wouldn't be much. And we're getting better every day because of you guys. So if you like this episode, what if this was your first episode of Comic Book Click that you ever listened to? Go back and listen to any other ones that might interest you. And you can do so by going to comicbookclick.com, because that's the one stop for everything Comic Book Click, our merchandise, our podcasts, our articles written by members of the Click. And like I said earlier, our merchandise that exists on TeePublic, designed exclusively by me, one of a kind of merchandise. Get it while it's hot. Get it while Disney doesn't take it down.
You heard? You've had a couple taken down.
We've had a couple. Licenses are funny in that way. But yeah, go to comicbookclick.com. It's our hub. It's our home. It's where all of the things that we do live and breathe. And consider hitting that shop CBC link or hitting that support Comic Book Click link. If you hit support Comic Book Click, you'll get transferred through the multiverse and hit our patreon.com/CBC Clubhouse headquarters, where for as little as $3 a month, 10 cents a day, you can help us keep the lights on here and gain enough money to start working and focusing on getting new hardware and software to produce more and various different kinds of content.
Multiversal content.
That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to do some more stuff. We actually, I actually dabbled a bit in reactions. I have a Superman and Lois reaction series that's on YouTube that's kind of popular. People are digging it. It's something I've never done before, but I am able to do because of the patrons that are helping to support. I'm able to pay another editor to come and handle our content here. And
this is that.
And it's really helping the channel and all of Comic Book Click grow. So I want to thank those who are already supporting, but consider $3 a month, people. You know, it's pretty cheap to become a patron of Comic Book Click. If you want to support us non-monetarily, you can go and leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes. It's the quickest way for us to grow as podcasters and find out what you like and what you don't. Because I, like The Watcher, have seen an alternate timeline in which we do become the latest and greatest things to come to comic books and comic book media in the future. But I can't tell you how we do it because it would mess up the
whole course. You cannot interfere.
The absolute point, people. I can't interfere. And I'm not willing to become a weird clawed octopus monster man. I don't have the face for it, so I'm not going to do it. But instead, I'm going to keep trying to produce quality content and episodes of the Major Issues podcast that are now over, 190 episodes. Knock on wood, we haven't missed. Oh, knock on vibranium, we haven't missed a single one yet. And it's been an absolute blast. So join, like, share, and subscribe. Rate us on iTunes. Consider buying some merchandise if you're down. And at the very least, consider becoming a patron and helping us grow this entire channel into something that we're proud of. But even if you can't, I'm already proud of all that we do here as part of Comic Book Click. So check out the various things in the links below of this episode where you can find ways to support or learn more about us, or become a fully fledged member of the Click. So consider doing all of that. But I think that's all I got. You got anything left for the people?
More what ifs.
People start thinking more about the what ifs in your life. Yes. But my name is George Serrano, aka the Don.
I am your cloud is Maximus.
And this has been our What If Season 1 recap and review. And remember, in the vast multiverse of possibilities, you may not be living your best life, but odds are you are surely not living your worst. So be happy, be grateful, help others, break the cycle, and always remember that you, yes, you are worthy.